You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning and welcome to episode 11 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I am your host, Kevin Durr. Back for another edition of the podcast. Please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker. This week's episode is going to be a little bit all over the place as there really wasn't any real news, so to speak. So we're just going to go ahead and jump right into the topics we're going to cover today. First, we're going to go over the most recent article I posted for DolphinsTalk.com. We'll talk about some of the free agents that I covered in that article and what it might mean in terms of draft strategy and just kind of some general thoughts and comments on some of the feedback and questions I got from that. We'll also talk about the, I guess, positional rankings I've come up with for the offensive side of the ball as it comes closer to draft time. I wanted to kind of dive into this, kind of discuss where I had guys if I were the Dolphins general manager, and then kind of go a little in depth on what they may do in the first round. So let's dive right into it. And we'll start off just by saying, I'll say thank you to all of you, and especially anyone who has read my most recent article, which is the Dolphins free agent review posted on DolphinsTalk.com. Got that up Friday morning and I've just been kind of overwhelmed by the number of responses and comments and feedback I've gotten about it. It was a lengthy piece. When I actually typed it up in Microsoft Word to get it ready, it was about 11 pages long and really kind of worked on it over the span of 10 days. Even had to go back and alter it a little bit because they signed John Jenkins in the middle of me putting that piece together. But, you know, just thank you for the feedback. Thank you to everybody who listens to the podcast here and reads my work at DolphinsTalk.com. It's been awesome to see that response, and that's why I continue to keep putting out content. And hopefully, we'll get to a place where I can put out even more content as we get closer and closer to the season. But anyway, just wanted to start off with that and just kind of detail what the article talked about. You know, I went through, if you guys have listened to the show, some of this is a little repetitive, so I'll just go over through it briefly. Talked about the different positions and roles that the Dolphins have sort of created within their defense. And I know back when they had Patrick Graham as the defensive coordinator in 2019, the first year this regime was here, he talked about how it's a positionless defense. And I guess I just wanted to provide a little bit of context to that before we dive into what the article said. I think they have very defined roles for what they want players to do in the defense, but they don't necessarily need a defensive end to be an edge-setting role. You know, they could use an outside linebacker there. They could use a guy who traditionally plays defensive tackle. You know, they've used Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer as a defensive end at times. They've even used a guy like Brandon Jones, who's a safety, as sort of a backside edge-setter to sort of contain backside runs. So there's always going to be that role of someone to sort of set the edge and contain the run, but it may not necessarily always be a defensive end or an outside linebacker. There's different ways to do things, and they move guys around in various personnel groupings and various packages, and I think that makes it harder for offenses to plan for what they're doing. So I went through all of those roles that sort of I've identified over the past 2 years of watching this defense, you know, coached by Flores and Josh Boyer. So there's a quick synopsis of all of those, and then we talked about all of the defensive free agents. I didn't do a write-up on Vince Beagle. I had a couple of other people kind of ask why. And my take on Vince Beagle is this. They went into training camp last year, and he got hurt. Didn't really miss a beat in his production. You know, Andrew Van Ginkle gave Miami a lot more in that edge linebacker role than Vince Beagle gave them in 2019. And I think it's pretty telling that the Dolphins were willing to go out and bring in Brennan Scarlett from Houston, you know, player who does kind of the same job as Vince Beagle, more of an edge setter against the run, a physical player more than an athlete, not really a tremendously, you know, well-renowned pass rusher by any means. And they went out and they gave him more money than they gave to Vince Beagle. So, you know, and I do think if they end up addressing the edge position, whether it's an outside linebacker or defensive end in the draft in a couple weeks, I think you're probably looking at a scenario where, you know, maybe one or the other between Brennan Scarlett and Vince Beagle makes the team, assuming no injuries for them prior to the season. And that's sort of where I think Vince Beagle falls. You know, Andrew Van Ginkel's clearly passed him on the depth chart. He's definitely not as good of a player at defensive end as Emmanuel Ogba. And I would argue that Zach Sealer gives you more overall, maybe not just specifically at defensive end because they only played their limited snaps last year. But I think he gives you more overall than what Vince Beagle does. So, you know, nothing against Vince. I think he's a good player. He tries hard, works hard, has a great motor, physical guy. But I think Miami's at the point now where he's kind of at the bottom of the depth chart in terms of that edge position. You know, and it's going to be an uphill battle for him to make the team, especially if they add one or more pieces via the draft and undrafted free agency, or even, you know, maybe they miss a guy and they bring in someone like Jadeveon Clowney after the draft. It's going to be hard for Vince Beagle to make the team this year, in my opinion. We also talked about how the defense may be looking for a little bit of a shift. Kind of talked about this on the last podcast episode, how I think now they've got some more freedom to move Zach Sealer around. You know, we noticed him playing defensive end in a lot of four-man fronts. That's something that Brian Flores did a lot of when he was running the defense for the Patriots. I kind of thought there'd be a little more of it here in Miami, and we just haven't seen it as frequently. But I wonder if that's something that they are looking to kind of get into. And I listened to other Dolphins podcasts, and I was listening to the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast the other day, and Alfredo Arteaga and Simon Clancy were the two guys hosting it. And I think they both made a really good point when it comes to some of these edge players in the draft. They were talking about different players like Azeez Ojulari, Joseph Osai, Kwity Paye, the two Miami defensive ends. And they made this point. I've talked about it on the podcast a little before. I've written about it in some articles. I think Alfredo said it way more succinctly than I ever have. And I know I'm a little long-winded, especially when I write. But if you're drafting some of these guys, like an Azeez Ojulari, for example, you're probably only going to be able to play him in the role that Andrew Van Ginkel played last year, which is just a straight-up edge rusher, edge linebacker, set the edge in the run game. You're not covering, you're not doing a whole lot of crazy stuff in terms of being involved in pass rush games. It's just an edge rush position. So if you do that, you're going to have to move Andrew Van Ginkel sort of into that Kyle Van Noy role. You know, Joseph Osai, I think you can go either way. You know, he's played the edge for a year in a game, but he also played off-ball linebacker. You know, the two Miami ends, Alfredo made the point that Gregory Rousseau, most of his damage was actually done in a reduced role playing inside. You know, Miami's got a whole arsenal of guys who can rush the passer from inside. Ogba, Wilkins, Sealer, they brought in Adam Butler, you know. And I think Rousseau's, there's only so much tape to go off of, and I kind of wonder if that'll spook Chris Greer and Brian Flores just a little bit. You know, Jalen Phillips, I think, is purely a wide end. I don't know if he's going to do a lot in terms of being a linebacker like Kyle Van Noy and dropping into coverage. I just don't think that's his game, and I also don't think you're going to get the best out of him if you reduce him in. So he's a little bit limited there. And then Simon Clancy made a great point where Kwity Paye, I think, might be the best edge pick for the Dolphins. And we'll talk about what happens at pick 6 and pick 18 at the end of the podcast. And we'll jump into a defensive heavy draft episode next week. But while he's not a finished product, if you go back and you look at, you know, the one big fish that the Dolphins tried to land that first year that Brian Flores came over, it was Trey Flowers. You know, Trey Flowers, strong guy, 6'2", 270. Freakishly long arms for someone who's only 6'2". Kwity Paye, kind of used in that same way at Michigan. They can play him out wide. You can play him right over the tackle, right over a tight end. You can reduce him inside. Not a finished product by any means in terms of his pass rush usage, his hand usage, that type of thing. But he's a very powerful player and can set the edge. I think he gives you a very high floor from which to build on. So I kind of wonder if we're sort of looking at someone like a Kwity Paye that might be higher on the Dolphins' radar than meets the eye. And we talked about that in the article as well. And perhaps that's kind of that one piece that's missing is that Trey Flowers type of guy. You know, we know they went after him hard. He ended up in Detroit. Miami's really, they tried Shaq Lawson last year. Didn't really get that experiment taken off the ground fully. Now he's gone because you bring in Bernardrick McKinney to help stop the run. Maybe they take another bite at the apple with Kwity Paye here. So that's kind of what the article talked about and you know, went into very in-depth breakdowns on each free agent. And there's some clips I was able to post on that. You can find them on my Twitter account as well, KevinMD4. So that's the gist of the article. And if I have time, I'd like to try and put one together about the offensive free agents Miami was able to acquire this offseason. I'd like to try and put it together before the draft. Hopefully I'll have time. Can't promise anything. I think at the very least we could put something together that's maybe not quite as in-depth, but look for that to try and come out in the next couple weeks here leading up to the draft. Now, we'll take a quick break to thank one of our sponsors, Manscaped.com. You know, fellas, it's mowing season. You're getting ready to do the cookouts, grill outs, have some parties, hopefully in a safe manner after this pandemic is through or you've gotten vaccinated. Check out Manscaped.com for your own personal mowing needs and use the code DolphinsTalk and you can get up to 20% off your order as well as free shipping. That's Manscaped.com and the promo code DolphinsTalk, all one word. So thank you to our friends at Manscaped.com. All right, now let's kind of jump into the meat of this episode, and this is going to be focused on the offensive side of the ball. Now, I went through, I think I've said this on the podcast before, this past year I had the opportunity to watch more college football than I've had in the last 4 or 5 years. So I went through and I made kind of my own draft board, so to speak, based on what the Miami Dolphins run and what I would do if I were Chris Greer, Brian Flores, Marvin Allen, that whole group. So I will preface this by saying some of these picks, or some of these player rankings, and I'll give you an example here in a second, may not be reflective of where I think they are overall in a vacuum if I was just making my own expansion team from scratch. So I'll give you one example, and we'll get to this in a minute, my wide receiver board. Maybe we'll save that one for last. But I have Rashad Bateman from Minnesota ranked as my 6th overall player for the Dolphins' needs. I think overall, he's probably my wide receiver 4. But I think because Miami already has Devontae Parker, Preston Williams, guys like that outside who can go up and high point it, that need for someone like that lessens a little bit. And thus he's kind of dropped down these specific rankings because we're doing it through the lens of the Dolphins rather than just overall every player in its own vacuum. So keep that in mind as we go through these rankings, and we'll kind of touch on each position here and how it works. So we'll go quarterback, running back, tight end, tackle, and then I kind of split up the interior line. We'll do 5 guards, 5 centers, and then we'll come back and hit the receivers, which I think is kind of the big category here. So starting off, as far as the quarterback position goes, obviously Miami's got Tua in-house. They signed Jacoby Brissett. They still have Reed Sinnott, who was on the practice squad, got called up for a couple games, and never played, but was called up a couple times last year. So I really don't know if there's a huge need here at quarterback. You know, maybe they take a flyer on someone in the seventh round or as an undrafted free agent to try and develop. You know, Jacoby Brissett only signed a 1-year deal. You may need a long-term backup moving forward after that. But anyway, my list, if the Dolphins were in the market, I would stack my top 10 quarterbacks as follows. Trevor Lawrence from Clemson. I think that's the pretty obvious one. I don't have him scored as highly as Andrew Luck coming out of Stanford back in 2012, but I think he's probably my highest graded quarterback since Andrew Luck, if that makes sense. I think there's a lot you can do. Big, strong, athletic kid, huge arm. There's some things he needs to clean up mechanically and with his accuracy. You know, a lot of talent at Clemson, got a lot of yards from screens and that type of thing, but I'm not too worried about him translating to the NFL. Number two would be Justin Fields from Ohio State. Kind of the same deal as Trevor Lawrence. Number three, Zach Wilson from BYU. You know, huge arm. You know, fun player to watch. Takes a beating from anyone except for their left tackle, Christensen, who's pretty good. You know, just kind of a fun player to watch, risky player, and I think that's why I have him behind Fields. Number four, maybe this is a bit of a plot twist for people, but I'll go with Mac Jones. Just, I really like how he plays the game from the pocket, throws a good deep ball, has accuracy, you know, and just really seemed like he got the most out of the talent around him at Alabama, kind of the same way that Tua did, you know, a couple years earlier. Number five, Trey Lance from North Dakota State. Number six, and I was really impressed by him at the Senior Bowl, would be Kellen Mond from Texas A&M. Might have the best tools in terms of physical tools out of all these quarterbacks, but just always kind of made boneheaded decisions at the worst times. You know, never could quite win those big games against the Alabamas of the SEC. Number seven, Davis Mills from Stanford. Number eight, and this guy was also kind of intriguing at the Senior Bowl, was Felipe Franks. Big, tall kid, good leader, has a big arm, has to clean up some of the accuracy issues. But I think there's some tools that you could kind of coax more out of with Felipe Franks. Number nine is Brady Davis from Illinois State. You know, watch some of his games, you'll see what I'm talking about. And number 10, this one's kind of a little bit of a homer pick to me because he's the only guy on this list I've seen while in attendance in person at a game, and that's Ian Book of Notre Dame. You know, certainly not the biggest guy, not the fastest guy, doesn't have the biggest arm, but just kind of has that moxie and gamer mentality where, you know, if you had to play him, say, you know, Tua has to sit out a week or something like that, you might be able to squeak out a win with Ian Book just because, you know, he's not afraid to tuck it and run. He can make some decent throws for you in the intermediate and the short game and just has that winning mentality. So I've got him at number 10. So, again, the list 1 to 10, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, Felipe Franks, Brady Davis, and Ian Book. Running backs, I kind of, you know, looked at my notes and the draft board I have typed up in Excel, and I was like, man, you know, a lot of people say, you know, it's just kind of the big four, and I have those four as my top four. Najee Harris is one, Travis Etienne two, Javonte Williams three, Kenneth Gainwell number four. But I kind of forgot about, you know, some backs that I'd already ranked, and I went back to these rankings. Kylan Hill from Mississippi State. I think Trey Sermon, there's, you know, tools to build off of. That Northwestern game in the Big Ten Championship is just kind of stuck in everybody's minds, but I think there's things you can do. Michael Carter from North Carolina, really impressive at the Senior Bowl. Jarrett Patterson from Buffalo, I think has an opportunity to play in the league. Might not be the fastest guy, but certainly ultra productive at Buffalo. Ramondre Stevenson at Oklahoma. And then Chuba Hubbard, the fast guy from Oklahoma State. I've seen Oklahoma State play several times. Chuba Hubbard is really fast, But he just kind of always left me wanting more as a running back. You know, if he hits a hole and he can turn on the Jets, great, he's going to go. But, you know, fighting through tackles, trying to get to the edge sometimes, was a little impatient trying to set up his blocks. I think there's tools there, but, you know, don't have him as highly as I've seen other people have Chuba Hubbard on running back boards. Now, let's kind of go back to the top three, Harris, Etienne, Javonte Williams. Obviously, I think there's different things that each of them are good at. Najee Harris, for me, the best all-around player, has soft hands, pretty good in pass pro, has great lateral cut ability. We saw him make the hurdle against Notre Dame, physical player. But I think Javonte Williams might be more of that hard-nosed inside runner than Harris is. Etienne is kind of your home run threat, you know, used as a kick returner. They use him a lot in the screen game. With Malcolm Brown on board for Miami, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they were more into Travis Etienne than they were into Najee Harris, which I think may surprise some people. But I've heard a few things about Miami and Travis Etienne. And then, you know, Javonte Williams, I think, could be an option. I don't know that any of these guys are going to go in round one. Or if they are, I think they're going to go late round one, sort of like Clyde Edwards-Helaire did last year for the Chiefs. I don't necessarily see Miami picking a running back at 18. You know, maybe if they trade back a little bit or move up from their second round pick that belongs to the Texans. So, we'll see on where they draft them, but I think those are the three guys, and I would probably stack them, Harris, Etienne, and Williams. But again, I'll reiterate, it would not surprise me one bit if Travis Etienne was their guy. So, as we said before, we're going to come back to receiver. We'll do that one. We'll save the best positional group for last. Tight ends. I think the clear and obvious number one, everyone knows it by now, is Kyle Pitts. And to me, you know, we'll talk about this in depth in a minute, but at pick number six, I think he's my top guy right now, regardless of any position. You know, just such a fantastic route runner for being 6'6 and 240 pounds. The agility he shows in running whip routes, jerk routes, that kind of stuff inside is fantastic. You know, really only saw two guys that had positive reps against him in man-to-man coverage. That was J.C. Horn from South Carolina and Tyree Gillespie from Missouri. So, and I think you could do an awful lot of damage, you know, having him and Mike Gesicki be opposite each other, kind of in the seam, in the slot areas. Devontae Parker, Will Fuller out wide. That's a tough group to have to defend. My number two tight end is Brevin Jordan from Miami. I think he's kind of forgotten a little bit in this whole process, but really good player. Pat Freiermuth from Penn State. I heard a lot about him, and then I saw him play against Ohio State, and you know, he was a little bit erased by Baron Browning and some of those other guys along the front. Just kind of dropped him down a little bit. Tommy Tremble from Notre Dame. Hunter Long from Boston College. I always butcher this next name. Kenny Yeboah from Ole Miss. Was impressed with him, his work in the Senior Bowl week. Luke Farrell from Ohio State. I probably have him higher than a lot of people on their draft boards, but you know, you're never going to confuse him for Kyle Pitts or Brevin Jordan or Mike Gesicki. But he's got some pretty soft hands. You know, he's more of an extra tackle. If you remember, the Bengals had a tight end named Reggie Kelly for years. And Reggie was basically like having a sixth offensive lineman into the game. You know, he might catch five passes all year. But he always, you know, had a nice long career in the NFL. Luke Farrell kind of strikes me as that way. Trey McKitty from Georgia's in there at number eight. Noah Gray from Duke, number 9. Tony Poljan from Virginia at 10. So again, running through the tight ends, 1 to 10. Kyle Pitts, Brevin Jordan, Pat Freiermuth, Tommy Tremble, Hunter Long, Kenny Yeboah, Luke Farrell, Trey McKitty, Noah Gray, and Tony Poljan. Now, we'll come back to offensive tackle. We'll do that after the interior guys. So I picked five guards and then five centers and stacked them this way. Top guard is Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. Although I think a lot of pundits have said this, you know, I don't know that Miami would take him, but I think whichever team takes him ought to try him at tackle first before you default to him playing inside. Then the next three guys are all guys I would love to see in the Miami Dolphins, but I don't know that they're going to spend that high of a pick on a guard. Trey Smith, for me, the best left guard we've got after Vera Tucker. Wyatt Davis from Ohio State. Robert Hainsey from Notre Dame. I think you could play him at guard or center. He was a tackle for the Fighting Irish. Probably going to have to move inside in college, but you know, nasty player. Impressive during the Senior Bowl. And then number five is a guy from my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio. That's Jackson Carman from Clemson. Kind of like Elijah Vera Tucker. He was a left tackle at Clemson. I think you need to check and see if he can play left tackle or right tackle in the league before you default him inside to guard. But I think he could be a pretty effective guard. Center, number one is Creed Humphrey. Two, Landon Dickerson. Three, Quinn Miners from Wisconsin Whitewater. He could also play guard for you. Four is Josh Myers from Ohio State. Five, Drake Jackson from Kentucky. Those are my top five centers. All right, now we come to offensive tackle. And while to me, I wouldn't consider this news, but Dolphins fans just get all up in arms when they see these mock drafts. Peter Schrager made some waves. Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football and Fox's NFL team had mocked Rashawn Slater to the Dolphins at pick six in his most recent mock draft. Now, here's the thing that I would remind Dolphins fans is that people like Peter Schrager have way more contacts throughout the league than you or I, we as fans do collectively. So I don't think this is just a randomly selected pick. I think there's something to it, and he's heard that perhaps Miami is looking to address the offensive line. Maybe they really liked Rashawn Slater. Maybe they had a big presence at the Northwestern Pro Day. You know, who knows? But for whatever reason, he felt compelled to put Rashawn Slater there. I would assume he's got at least bits of information that connect Rashawn Slater to the Dolphins. You know, I have him as my number two tackle behind Penei Sewell. And I guess I'll just put this out there. You know, I don't think anyone is called Rashawn Slater a generational talent. I've seen people call Penei Sewell a generational talent, and I disagree. You know, in terms of pass blocking, I think he's a good chunk behind where Laramie Tunsil was coming out of Ole Miss, where DeBrickashaw Ferguson was coming out of Virginia, where Ryan Clady was coming out of Boise State. You know, he doesn't give up any sacks, but you look at his technique, you know, he can tend to bend at the waist, he tends to stop his feet, he can be a little lungy, and we found out he only had, you know, less than 34-inch arms. Not that that's a death sentence for a tackle. I believe Joe Thomas had less than 34-inch arms. But, you know, he wasn't the gargantuan specimen people made him out to be. You know, he's only 6'4". So he's not even as tall as Laramie Tunsil was. And, you know, I would also say, go back, watch his games at Oregon. Who's the best pass rusher he faced in the Pac-12? You know, who's the best guy he went up against? Is it Joe Tryon from Washington? Is it Kayvon Thibodeau in practice at Oregon? Because those are the best names I can come up with. You know, just food for thought here, an example as it relates to the Dolphins was Laramie Tunsil. He had already come through and seen all the guys in the SEC from Alabama, from Florida, from LSU. On top of that, you know, he had gone up against Carl Lawson from Auburn, who a lot of people kind of latched onto the idea of him being a Dolphin and were pretty upset about. But he had faced Carl Lawson. He had faced Emmanuel Ogba, our own Emmanuel Ogba, in the bowl game. And he had faced Myles Garrett and did a pretty damn good job against Myles Garrett. So not only was Laramie Tunsil just an elite prospect, elite movement skills, size, length, but he had skins on the wall, legitimate skins on the wall. Guys who would go on to become NFL pass rushers had those skins on the wall. I don't think you can say the same for Penei Sewell, especially in comparison to Rashawn Slater, who's got Chase Young in his bag. Now, neither of them is a perfect prospect, but I think both of them would merit consideration at six. But what I think the key is here is if you're Miami, at least optically, isn't there something a little off about trading away Laramie Tunsil, getting this whole war chest of picks off that trade, and then, you know, you've maneuvered them around and turned it into two more first-round picks down the road, thanks to this trade with the 49ers. But now you're going to use, you know, the highest remaining resource you have from that trade and go ahead and select another tackle who's not as good of a pass blocker as Laramie Tunsil. You're going to select him higher than you got Laramie Tunsil in the draft after just selecting a tackle in the first round and a tackle in the second round a year ago. So at some point, I think if you do that, optically, you're admitting that one of your own evaluations was wrong. Whether it's Austin Jackson, which I don't think it is there, or Robert Hunt, you know, I think it's kind of unfair to write him off. People talk about Tua Tagovailoa all the time needing more time to develop, but they don't ever mention that for Robert Hunt or Austin Jackson. So, you know, who knows? Those guys might end up being really good players. You know, if you're going to make a move, I would want it to be sort of for a right tackle to help protect Tua's blind side. And if you're going to do that, I think there's better value taking Tevin Jenkins, who's a natural right tackle. Sewell and Slater are not. But Tevin Jenkins is my third tackle, and I guess that was kind of a long roundabout way to get there. But the top three, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, Tevin Jenkins. I have Christian Darrisaw fourth. I have Sam Cosmi from Texas at five. I have Alex Leatherwood from Alabama at six. And I guess there's some hidden value there, because even if he doesn't work out as a tackle, he still has some experience at guard. So you've got some position flexibility and experience in his background. Dylan Radinge from North Dakota State is my number seven. This is kind of my underdog, but James Hudson from the University of Cincinnati is eight. Liam Eichenberg, number nine. And Brady Christensen from BYU, number 10. So those are my tackles. Sewell, Slater, Jenkins, Darrisaw, Cosmi, Leatherwood, Radinge, Hudson, Brown, Eichenberg, Liam Eichenberg I had up there as well, and then Christensen from BYU. Would, I guess that's technically 11 guys, but I like them all, and I think it's a great tackle class. Spencer Brown, you know, kind of a developmental guy, needs some work, but a mountain of a man. He'd be an intriguing look for the Dolphins as well, in my opinion. So we've gotten through all the positions. We'll get to wide receivers right now. So I'm just going to fire through the list. And again, remember, this is how I would view it based on the Miami Dolphins offense, their system, having Tua, and what all that entails. So we'll go through them rapid fire, and then I'll tell you my reasons why. So we'll just go 1 to 10. Number 1, Devontae Smith. Number 2, Ja'Marr Chase. 3, Jaylen Waddle. 4, Rondale Moore. 5, Kadarius Toney. 6, Rashad Bateman. 7, Dwayne Eskridge. 8 is Amari Rodgers. 9 is Nico Collins from Michigan. He opted out last year, if you're not as familiar with that name. And 10, Amon-Ra St. Brown from USC. Now, I know a lot of people are very high on Ja'Marr Chase. I know a lot of people will talk about Jaylen Waddle being the next Tyreek Hill. But for me, for my money, Devontae Smith produced immediately as a freshman with Tua. They connected for that big touchdown. He produced immediately the next year when Tua was the starter. He's got more rapport with Tua, in my opinion, than Waddle, just based off of the number of completed passes. And I think the biggest thing to me is, you know, despite his size, despite whatever his 40 time actually is, because he hasn't tested this offseason, he just knows how to run routes and get open. You know, I don't quite see that level of route running from Ja'Marr Chase. I think he might be the better physical athlete than Devontae Smith. But Devontae Smith just knows how to get open. He knows how to get open, and he catches everything. I mean, just absolutely shredded the Ohio State secondary in the national championship game. You know, you go back and you watch him against J.C. Horn from South Carolina. That's about the one guy that J.C. Horn didn't win against, was Devontae Smith. Now, Ja'Marr Chase, number two, I think he's the more physically compelling prospect. But, you know, kind of the way he plays the game is a little similar to how Miami have used guys like Devontae Parker, Preston Williams. Now you have Will Fuller as well. I think there's another shoe that has to drop if you take Ja'Marr Chase. You know, maybe you try and trade someone, you know, I guess Parker or Williams in that case. Devontae Parker's contract is so team friendly, I think I would probably turn the lens onto Preston Williams in that scenario and maybe see if he can get you some kind of draft resource to use. But I think with Devontae Smith and his route running ability, his ability to take screen passes and get yards after catch, his ability to be used in motion, I think you can get a lot of mileage out of him, you know, in the slot, even if he's not, you know, your typical Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type of slot receiver. And then, you know, Rondale Moore and Kadarius Toney, I put them above Bateman just because I think their playing speed and their ability to play in the slot kind of trumps what Bateman gives you because, again, he's kind of similar to Devontae Parker outside. Dwayne Eskridge, you know, with the speed, gave him a slight nod over Amari Rodgers. Nico Collins, to me, is kind of the better version of Preston Williams. But again, that's kind of why I had him there. And Amon-Ra St. Brown rounded off my list. So again, from 1 to 10, Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Rondale Moore, Kadarius Toney, Rashad Bateman, Dwayne Eskridge, Amari Rodgers, Nico Collins, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. So those are my top 10 offensive player rankings at each of those positions. Again, I split up the interior offensive line doing 5 guards, 5 centers. But those are all guys that I like and I think would be fits for the Dolphins at some point in the draft or even with some of those names potentially undrafted free agency. Now, I wanted to talk about round 1, pick 6 and pick 18. And we'll keep it through an offensive lens. So these would just be offensive players that I would try and target, and if I were a betting man, guys that I would bet on at those spots. So for me at 1-6, I'm going to take Penei Sewell and take Rashawn Slater out of the equation. You know, Miami's already put those resources into the offensive line. I think you have to give those guys, meaning Austin Jackson and Robert Hunt, a fair chance to continue to develop. So for me, at pick 6, it's a debate between 4, and those 4 being Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, in that order is how I have them stacked. So I think, to me, Jalen Waddle, you can kind of put him at the tail end of that race. So it's Pitts and Smith and Chase. Those are the top 3 guys I would have at 6. I think Miami's going to have a chance at one of them for sure, maybe 2 of them. And I would argue for Kyle Pitts over them just because I think he's the most surefire prospect at being a success at his respective position in the draft. And I think there's so many dynamic things you can do with him. You look at how the Kansas City Chiefs use Travis Kelce. You look at how the Raiders use Darren Waller. you know, Mike Gesicki for Miami is kind of that vertical seam threat. You can put him on the backside of a 3-by-1 and throw vertically to him. I think Kyle Pitts is a little bit more athletic in terms of what he can do laterally. You can use him on crossing routes. You can use him on whip routes in the red zone against the safety. You could put him opposite Mike Gesicki and use that defensive identification to figure out what coverage you're in. You know, if they're walking a linebacker out versus if they're going to put an actual man cover corner on Kyle Pitts. And then if they do, that gives you another a better matchup for someone inside like Devontae Parker or Will Fuller or Lynn Bowden Jr. So to me, I think what Kyle Pitts brings to the offense, plus he's a pretty solid blocker. Most people kind of discount that just because he's not, you know, a Rob Gronkowski clone. He's still a pretty good blocker in his own right. So I think he just brings more overall to the table than Devontae Smith, who I would have number two. I think with Devontae Smith, I have him number two because you can line him up in the slot. Alabama made pretty good use of using him out of the backfield or motioning him, those orbit motions. You can play him outside on the perimeter. You know, he can take a screen pass and get yards after catch. He's a great route runner, and I think, you know, you can use him in more ways than you can use Jamar Chase. So that's what I'm going for at pick six. Pick 18, I think, is a little bit more all over the place. You know, I've seen a lot of people mock Najee Harris there. I think if Miami does go with Kyle Pitts at pick six, you could certainly look at receiver. You know, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, you know, maybe still on the board there. I think you could look, if you really want to get a left tackle and try and kick Robert Hunt inside, Tevin Jenkins makes sense there at pick 18. So that's really kind of where my head's at. And I would say the wild card at pick 18 would be Travis Etienne, kind of the home run hitter. And now that you have Malcolm Brown as sort of that power back, that bigger third down back that can churn out short yardage, maybe Miami continues to use someone like Travis Etienne, who can be a big factor in the passing game at 18. So I guess for my money, if I were a betting man and I had to bet on offensive players to go at both of those spots, just a gut feeling, and it's kind of been this way really since last fall, I think Devontae Smith is the pick at six. I don't necessarily think Miami picks an offensive player at pick 18. But if they did, I think my bet would be on Tevin Jenkins, the tackle from Oklahoma State. So there you have it. We've been through a review of the article I posted on dolphinstalk.com. Go ahead and check that out. Please retweet it if you can. Would love to have more people comment and get a chance to view that. Hopefully we'll put an offensive article out like that in the next week or two before the draft gets here. We've covered my positional rankings for the offensive side of the ball. We're going to do the defensive side of the ball next week. We'll get into the weeds a little bit in terms of, you know, would Miami be looking for a defensive end or an edge linebacker? You know, is there maybe a hidden area that they need to address on defense? Because it's, I would argue it's much closer to being a finished product than the offense is at this point. And then we'll cover any news, you know, throughout the week. So thank you guys for listening. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can follow all my articles on DolphinsTalk.com. Thank you guys. We'll be back for episode 12 next week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and fins up.